D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. One half of the college football national championship game has been set. Miami defeats Ole Miss last night. Oregon versus Indiana in just a few hours to determine the other half of the national title game, January 19th at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. And there will be no SEC representative in the national title game for the third year in a row. So we're talking about this sort of crossroads, I'm going to call it, that the where you know that the SEC finds itself. And I want to start this segment by reading something from Seth Emerson of The Athletic, who wrote a column about this very subject, and I want y'all's opinion on it. He writes, quote, "A humbled SEC may become a desperate but smarter SEC, because if the conference is going to get its mojo back, it will just need to mean more again, as in more money towards players. Normally, you could say the SEC was just due for a dip. This was cyclical, nothing to waste a column on. But the dip coincides with the other changes in the sport. The world is flat now, and too many SEC teams were slow to react." Do you agree?
I don't think it's about more money. I think what's been proven is it's about smart, how you build your roster. Now, if everybody gets smart, see, this is what happened with Moneyball in baseball. The A's had a leg up, and they started kicking the you-know-what out of teams that had way more money to spend because those teams were so stupid on how they spent it. But what happened over time? People were like, well, what are the A's doing? Let's hire some people from the A's. Let's get our own analytics department. Let's figure out what they're doing, and we'll do it better, and we have more money. That made it harder for the A's, and that's part of the reason the A's are moving to Vegas, right? They couldn't make it happen. So that might happen over a long period of time, is the SEC will have more to spend, and they'll get smarter on how they spent it or how they spend it. But I still think that the problem for the SEC is going to be within the league. It's going to be so competitive that no matter if you spend more, everybody's going to be spending close to you, and there'll be a lot of teams that are smart in how they do it. And what did they just do as a league? In addition to adding Oklahoma, adding Texas, now they're going to 9 conference games. And they're still telling you in your league, hey, we're going to play 9 conference games against a brutal schedule. And you still got to schedule another team outside of the SEC that's a Power Four. So now you don't even have that cupcake at the end of the season. Oh, thank goodness we're playing Samford and we can win 66-0 and just sort of have a scrimmage. You can't do that anymore. So it's even going to be tougher to dominate than it has been.
Cry me a river. Please do. Well, you got Arkansas to play, who's a cupcake. You got South Carolina this
year
to play.
If you think that's a cupcake. Those aren't cupcakes.
Yes, they are. They won 2 games.
Right.
Both of them.
You
combined, combined 6 games they won and lost 18 of them.
They're the best 2-win teams in the country, I guarantee.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are.
No, they're not. See, it's just... the snobbery is at full effect.
It is, but it's true.
Okay, listen. It's not about, and this is what I think college as a whole needs to understand, because this is professional sports now. It's not about how much money you spend. It's how you spend it and who you spend it on. It's about building a team, because you only got 1 year to do this. You know, 1, maybe 2, because guys, even if you pay them one, they may transfer the next following year. So you only got 1 to 2 years to do this. That's why Cignetti has been so successful. It's not that if you look at his roster based on last year, they probably didn't have the highest paid roster out there, but they had the right guys and they bought into a system and they were able to play together as a team. We've seen guys, hell, Texas has the biggest wallets in the world, the largest wallets in the world. And look at what happened to them.
Yeah, right.
You know, so it's not about how much money you can spend. These GMs are very important now. Not only about, it's about, you know, the salary cap. It's about going out there and being able to evaluate these players that are coming from other schools. Maybe it's a Division III, a fair state. Now you got to put in the time to really scout these guys. Because you may end up paying a guy just because a lot of money just because he transferred in from Alabama. He get on your team and he's not a fit for you. He's not. And I think teams are starting to find that out more times.
That's becoming the undervalued position that is going to be one that people probably pay more attention to.
Exactly.
So who can match the personnel to what you're trying to do?
To your point, Derek, about how much teams spend on their rosters, Sportico had a story published last month. In the most recent year for which data is available, Alabama spent $113.8 million on its football team, shattering the previous record by more than $30 million. And Alabama, according to this story, has had the country's most expensive football team in six of the past 7 seasons.
Now, what does that encompass? Just the players, or players, coaches? Like, what is all added up in that 100 plus million?
That's a good question. I will clarify.
I don't think the team roster is quite that high, right? The payroll of the team roster.
I have to assume it also includes Kalen DeBoer as well.
It's got to be. Right?
I'll have to look.
And the 15 million assistants. You ever go to a page of an SEC team and said, look at the staff? It used to be like, here's the staff. Here are the eight guys, and here's their little bio. Now it is such a long list of people.
There's not a number of coaches they can't have.
It's unbelievable how many people you have on your support staff. That adds up.
One texter says, stop it, Willie. What does an SEC schedule have to do with struggling in the playoffs against non-SEC teams? Just take off your Homer glasses and admit good football exists outside of the
yes,
SEC.
Yes.
It absolutely does, and I'm tipping my hat to those teams. But the road to get there is tougher in the SEC. It wears you down, and now you've got to win three playoff games. It's not what it used to be. You don't have the depth advantage that you used to have. It's harder to dominate. So I think the SEC's got to get used to it. I think they're going to be back. I still believe it's the best league.
So,
1 second, just to clarify, that $113.8 million number does include the coaching staff. The school paid $47.4 million in total coaching staff compensation that year amidst the head coaching change from Nick Saban to Kalen DeBoer. In addition to coaches' salaries, Alabama was also on the hook for a roughly $12 million buyout to cover DeBoer's departure from Washington.
So I think this is what teams have to figure out. Okay, I got all this money. Mm-hmm. How do I allocate it? What's the right amount for players? What's the right amount for coaches? Right amount for staff, et cetera?
Yeah, and you know, but I think what everybody is starting or need to start to realize is that, again, you know, the playing field, at least for the top half of all conferences, well, the four major conferences, let's just say it, really the two major conferences, the Big Ten and the SEC, no slight to, you know, the Big 12 or the ACC. But I think now what is happening, that top eight to nine teams, it's going to be every year, eight to nine teams, it's going to be competitive. But the bottom half is not. That's just the way it's going to be. That's the way it really has always been in the SEC, where you had your dominant teams at the top and then you had everybody at the bottom. But now, because of NIL, it has those teams that are at the bottom, they're starting to win more games now. It's not that they are, you know, competing at that level day in and day out, week in and week out with an Alabama or Georgia teams at the top, but they've gotten better. So now they can win more games. But still, when they go up against an Alabama or Georgia or one of these other top teams, Ole Miss or LSU, they're still going to end up losing, meaning the bottom half of the SEC. They're still going to end up losing more times than not that game to an Alabama, a Georgia, and LSU or Florida.
Justin says, he's just listing Big Ten schools now: Purdue, Maryland, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Rutgers, Penn State, UCLA, Northwestern, Nebraska, all seem like cupcakes this year. I would pick Arkansas over any of them. Jess says, how can the road still be tougher? I think the point of the conversation is that it isn't anymore. Sorry, Willie, I respectfully disagree.
That's fine. That's why we have talk radio. These are.
But I thought the SEC has always been tough. I thought it's always been tough.
It has.
It can't get tougher if you've always been tough.
I think think about what you used to have to do. Mm-hmm. You used to have to win the SEC, and then you had one or two playoff games.
It's not that they play. Every team don't play each other in this conference.
I know.
They just don't. So, again, I don't.
But no matter how you divide up the schedule, you don't play everybody, but you mm-hmm. still, I still would say, I would argue that Mississippi State and Arkansas, who are at the bottom of the league, Kentucky's one of their, on a given week, they would be able to challenge any top 25 team and play them nose to nose and make you work for the win. It was not easy to win those games. Auburn would be another one, a kind of a run-of-the-mill team. Mm-hmm. Almost beat Vanderbilt. Almost beat Alabama at the end. They were capable. Should have beat, you know, kind of got hosed out of a win at Oklahoma, another playoff team. So that's what I'm talking about week in and week out. I don't think that happens as much in the Big Ten.
To your point, Willie, about the SEC bringing in Texas and Oklahoma, the SEC probably thought it would rule NIL, right, and free player movement. And it appears, to your point, which I think I will agree with you if I am getting your point correctly, is that the SEC sort of did this to itself.
Yes, I think they did, and also I think over time I'm curious, like the Indiana model, which is sort of close to the Vanderbilt model, mm-hmm. really smart spending, really good coaching. They built a roster. I wonder how many schools will be able to start emulating that and what effect that's going to have on all the leagues, really.
As far as
the parity, the number of teams on a given year that might be able to win the whole thing, which dilutes the ability for any conference to win year after year, like the SEC got used to doing mm-hmm. for a long time. I just think it's going to be harder for anybody to dominate.
Well, and that's my point is – you know, this is a new world for the SEC, and they don't like it, but they're going to have to get used to
it.
Yeah,
but my argument is it doesn't mean they're not the best league. I think it's still the best league.
So what do you qualify as? Okay, again, what do you qualify? What are the qualifications for being the best league?
Because the high level of play in the league, top to bottom in the league, week in and week out.
But before it was about winning championships. But now it's not about winning a championship?
No, I think it's always about winning a championship. It's harder now. When you have to mm-hmm. win three playoff games.
But y'all still the best conference, supposedly. The best conference in America.
They're going to win their share over time. I don't know if it'll ever be like it was the last, I don't know, 15 or 20 years.
Which doesn't make y'all the best conference?
No, it's still the best conference.
How?
Because
What are the measurements?
The depth.
Okay,
the number of contenders.
But ultimately, who wins the national championship? The best conference, right?
No.
We're not talking about...
If Miami wins it, does that mean the ACC
yes,
was the best conference?
Exactly, yes.
Heck no.
Yes, they won
you
the championship.
You know better than that.
Hey, listen, this is what I'm talking about. The goalpost is being moved. Forever is win a championship,
Gonzaga wins the basketball,
okay,
that doesn't mean their league is the best league.
Hold on, let me interject.
Okay.
As the ACC snob. On the show, okay?
They're a basketball conference.
Let me interject.
Well, they've won their two national. No, they didn't win 10 with Clemson.
Well,
or they won.
Well, Clemson won the couple.
Yeah,
but this is my point. Mm. I will agree with Willie on this. If Miami wins the national championship, the ACC is not the best conference in college football. Miami didn't even make it to its own championship
game. Here we go. We're changing the rules of the game because said conference isn't in the championship. We don't talk about the SEC because they win SEC championships or they win bowl games. We talk about the SEC. Why? Because in 2022, they won the national championship. 2021, 2020, 2019, 2017, 2015, 2012, 2011, and 2010. That's why we talk about the SEC being a dominant conference. Not because they win an SEC championship or winning bowl games, but now all of a sudden... the rules change.
Y'all
want to play it like that?
It's a new system.
It's a new system.
Look, it is a new system.
Derek,
transfer portal. It's a new system.
Derek, I think you're making some valid.
We got a playoff. We got playoff tiers.
I think you're making some valid points, but to hear you just say, I had to jump in when you said. If Miami wins the national championship, ACC is the best conference in college football.
You're based on the old system.
See, now it's the old system, championships.
If they win,
they're the best conference this year because they won.
It pains me to say this, but an 8-5 Duke team won the ACC championship.
Nobody cares about ACC championships. Do they? No.
But you can't make the argument that the ACC is the best conference if Miami wins.
If they win their championship.
That's where your argument went off the rails a little bit.
That's what we've been doing to the SEC for the last 15 years. If an SEC team wins, I don't care if it was Vandy that won the national championship. I wish it would have been. The SEC is the greatest. The minute the SEC don't make it to a championship game, the second year in a row, and they are not going to win a championship, this will be the third year. Now all of a sudden it's, now we got to change it. Push that goalpost back a little bit further because why? The SEC isn't in it.
Okay, hold on. We've got some great text. Skyler says, I just about drove my truck off the road when D-May said the ACC is the best conference in college football. Another texter said, Willie sounds like a lunatic. So we're all over the map here. We're all over the map. Let's go to Danny on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com. Danny, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going? Willie, I got a question for you. What is what qualifies the best team that year in the NFL?
Well, we're talking about a different league.
Nope, the Super Bowl champion, right?
That's the answer you want? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Super Bowl champion. So the best team in the college football is going to be the one that wins. And the ones that consistently win is going to be the teams that continues to win.
Right, the team, but does that define the strength of the league, though? To me, that's a separate question.
But what qualifies the strength of that league? Just because the way they look, is it not a test?
I'll give you another example of what I think. How many times were Indiana and Oregon pressed during their regular season? How many really tough games did they have within their league? A lot less than Georgia and Ole Miss and Texas A&M. In my opinion, there were some games that were a cakewalk. More games for Oregon and Indiana that were a cakewalk. Same with Ohio State, the teams out of the Big Ten. So I think it was an easier path to get where they are in terms of the strength of the league.
I still think that if Indiana had to play an extra game, they would still walk the floor with them. I think that that extra game, that SEC teams have to play, I don't think it necessarily matters that much because they've had five teams in there that they had five chances. Granted, they knocked some people out themselves, but they just had a lot more chances than a lot of these other non-SEC teams had, and they couldn't make it again for the third year in a row. And that's all I'd say.
Thank you for the call, Danny. 615-737-1025. We've got a lot of opinions in our text line. We will get to those coming up next.
Am I a snob for the SEC?
Yes.
You sure are. And that's okay. You're unapologetic about it, and I admire that. And I think Derek is making some great points, too. But when I heard that ACC take, I almost pulled my car off the road, and I'm not even driving.
I'm not sure he really believes it. I think he kind of walked into it and said, wait a minute, I got to stay with it. I got to stay strong.
615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.
I knew it.
D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025. The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. A spirited debate between Willie Donick and Derek Mason on the state of college football. James on our text line, Derek, wants to remind you it is no longer eggnog season.
So why? What happened?
What did is I he do? Saying you've had too much?
Yes.
I had too much eggnog?
Yes.
Nope.
Let's go to Todd on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Todd, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen. Just a quick check on ChatGDP will tell you that in the last 10 years in the NFL, there's more SEC players. That's pretty obvious that the SEC is carrying, that much weight. I understand about championships, but you guys are former athletes. You know this. When you're playing six or eight big games a season, how many players for Alabama and these types of teams lose their better players as the season goes on because of the grind? Indiana's got to play, two or three big games a year? You can get up for two or three big games a year. But just like you said, Willie, there's too many cupcakes in there.
Speaking of cupcakes.
Here we go. Here we go. The snobbery.
Thank you, Todd.
Derek just distributed cupcakes in the studio. Yeah, just that was fitting we got that call about cupcakes. Do you disagree?
Give
me the grind, toughest games Indiana played this year.
I'm going to tell you. The grind period for every college football team in their conference is a grind. It's physical. Every conference is physical, no matter what conference it is. And it's all relative. Indiana's, their grind is relative to their conference, and it's still hard. You ask the Indiana players, the grind for Alabama or Georgia or anybody else, it's their grind in the SEC. The grind, it doesn't mean that they don't have a grind that they have to go to. Again, we are pushing this goalpost back now, now that the SEC hasn't shown their dominance within the college football playoffs in the last couple of years. Now, all of a sudden, it's, okay, we need to push the goalpost back a little bit. We're talking about the conference as a whole. Look at what, from top to bottom, look at their grind week in and week out. I get all of that, but that wasn't the argument years ago. The argument was we won championship after championship. They didn't say we won. It's supposed to be about championships. But now all of a sudden it's about, from top to bottom. Who's the strongest conference from top to bottom? Okay. But who winning championships from top to bottom? The Big Ten has won the last two, and they may win another one.
Jacob on our text line says, SEC fans and members always move the goalpost. For example, Notre Dame beats Arkansas by 43, and the narrative is Arkansas is a bottom feeder and bad team. Arkansas loses all of its conference games combined by almost the same margin as the single Notre Dame loss, and the narrative is, look how deep the SEC is. No bad teams. Anyone can beat anyone.
See?
They didn't play very well against Notre Dame.
Oh, so that. Now it's they didn't play very well against Notre Dame.
That was not a good showing for Arkansas. Goodness. It was not.
Again, I am not saying that the SEC is in a damn good conference, because it is. But we only have this conversation not because of bowl games. No, it was because of who won the national championship. And rightfully so. I couldn't say the Big Ten won. The ACC or the Big 12 couldn't say that. Only conference could say that based upon championships, national championships, was the SEC. So, all right, you earned it. You deserved it. There's the crown for being the best conference, because y'all won championship after championship. But hold on. Hold on. Y'all ain't winning championships no more. Now all of a sudden it's, that's not what we're talking about.
We're going to different layers.
Now we're
going
to change.
We're moving the goalposts. There's no question. And at the same time, I do want to say that the champion is the champion. Mm-hmm. I think it's a separate question of what is the best league. The best league doesn't always equal the league that has the champion. That is the argument that I'm making in a nutshell.
Okay. And
I think that's been the case these last 3 years. No, I think it's top to bottom.
See, the last 3 years.
But it hasn't had the champion.
The last 3 years.
Yeah.
What was before that? Oh, yeah, we're the best. We the best. No matter if because back then the conference wasn't
even
as.
Know if you could argue. There was no argument
exactly,
for anybody else.
But
back then,
the conference wasn't as deep as it is now. Back then, it wasn't. People still were screaming the SEC. And I'm not saying that the chants were not deserving, because they were. Because at the end of the day, the SEC more times than not walked away with the national championship. But now that things are changing when it comes to the national championship. Now, if you want to just say, consistently over the years, from top to bottom, winning bowl games and this and that, okay. But that's not what we're talking about now. Now the conversation has changed. Now it's, no longer is it about championship winning. Before, it was about championships. That's all it's about. That's why the argument about Michael Jordan and LeBron James will continue to be an argument. Why? It's about championships to some people. Others, look how long LeBron played. Look how many individual stats he has. Look at this, look at that. And then the Jordan fans like me say, but Jordan won 6 championships.
Okay.
That's what it's about, isn't it?
So let's again go back to my argument about Indiana and their pathway to get here, to get to the playoff.
Goodness.
Here are their tough games this year.
They had 2 of them.
At Iowa, where they had to pull it out. At Oregon.
At Penn State.
And Penn State ended up being 7-6. So, how tough of an opponent? I mean, that game was a challenging game. but it wasn't against a great team. Right?
Oh, but when Arkansas has a challenging game, it's, well, Arkansas, oh, the conference is tough.
Okay, but the Arkansas is arguably the worst team in the SEC. The worst team in any league is going to have some bad performances.
Well, Auburn, too, the same thing. But Auburn
right.
is tough.
I'm saying those teams were more capable of playing a game where they could stand toe-to-toe with a really good team, like Penn State. Penn State was preseason number one. Like, they underachieved, so you kind of knew that was going to be tough. But that's a whole schedule of 12 regular season games where basically three were challenging for Indiana. And part of that is because Indiana is so good. Like, they whipped Illinois. Illinois is a good team. They beat them 63-10. So part of it is Indiana is that good. But there were some games that were mismatches, a lot more games that were mismatches within their league.
So what people
the
are basically
bottom part
saying,
of that league is weaker.
What people are basically saying is that no matter what, last year and this year, Indiana's record, Georgia's record, or Ole Miss's record, or Alabama's record, is better than Indiana's win because they play in a tougher conference. We're going to exclude that Alabama lost three or four games. We're going to exclude that these other teams have lost two or three games, but if they were in the Big Ten or if Indiana was in SEC, Indiana wouldn't be the team that they are now.
It would be a tougher road. Now, Indiana proved in that Rose Bowl that they were quite a bit better than Alabama. That is the proof that Indiana is legit. I'm just saying the road that was traveled was an easier path than, say, Georgia, who had to beat Ole Miss in the regular season just to stay alive and get to the playoff. And then had to beat Ole Miss again, which they couldn't do. This is an illustration of the tough road that you have in the league. Indiana could have lost the game against Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. They didn't have to win that game to get into the playoff. That's
but
how
they
easy
won
the road.
It.
And they won it. To
they
their
beat
credit.
Did Indiana beat Michigan? They didn't play them.
They didn't play Michigan.
They didn't play Michigan this year.
They beat Michigan State.
They beat Michigan State. I get that.
Just throwing that in there.
They're at the bottom, just like Arkansas and South Carolina. And whoever else is at the bottom of the conference.
They had league games, Indiana did. 63-10, 56-6, 55-10, 31-7, 56-3. Part of that is because they're really good. But those are league games. Show me a list of games in the SEC that ended up 56-6.
What about when LSU was just blowing the doors off of everybody? And I'm talking about people in the SEC. This argument didn't come up. It was just, okay, LSU was just damn good. They didn't minimize the conference. It was just they were that good. Why is it now minimizing the conference? Because Indiana is just that good. Why we can't just say Indiana's that good?
I stand by my argument. It's not as deep. It's not as deep. And Indiana is legit. And if Oregon wins, I think I would say the same thing about Oregon.
Jess
easier
said,
road, but a very legitimate national champion.
Jess on our text line says, Willie's argument would not hold up in a court of law.
What?
Another texter says, D-Mace is obviously anti-SEC. All I have to say is the next train out of town leaves at 8 o'clock.
If you've been listening to the show, I ain't taking no train. If you've been listening to the show.
You're not going to be sitting with John Madden?
Nah. For a while, I need to get to my destination fast. You will know that I have recognized how good the SEC has been. I've always said that. And I've said up until today, I've said the SEC, they have a right to hold on to that moniker, you know. But when things start to change, don't move the goalposts. That's all I'm saying. I think the SEC is still a damn good conference. They're still the top conference. But what I'm saying is, if we're going by the old rules, then the Big Ten is the top conference, or the ACC is the top conference.
The ACC is not. You got to stop that. And that's coming from me. Quickly, one texter says, I watched Missouri leave the Big 12 and go to the SEC. They went from a mediocre team in the Big 12 and then went to back-to-back SEC title games. SEC snubs wrote it off as a weak SEC East. Nonsense. The top of the SEC is typically elite. The rest is like all the other conferences.
Wait, Missouri's been in the league for like 15 years now. He's going back a long way for that. And I do remember exactly the time he's talking about. It was kind of a weaker East at the time. They got to play in the championship game.
See?
It did happen. Sometimes it happened the other way, where the West was weaker in some years.
But isn't it supposed to be the toughest conference?
I think it's changed considerably. My theory is since the NIL and the transfer portal came in, it's leveled the playing field, and everybody, including Vanderbilt, is in the game with something to bring to the table, more so than the bottom five or six teams in the Big Ten.
615-737-1025. The summary from the text line is, you are both nuts. Some of you think Derek is nuts. Some of you think Willie is nuts. And I think there's a Purdue logo on my cupcake here. 615-737-1025. Sorry, Boilermakers, for catching a stray. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, I want to sneak in a quick Predators thought here. The Predators won once again last night against the New York Islanders, and I'm still feeling conflicted. And I want to hear from Predators fans who might also be feeling conflicted. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
Right-hand shot, picks up, comes in with speed. Over through the left, moves across. Backhander scores! Philip Forsberg puts the Predators up 1-0.
The Predators win once again last night in a shootout against the New York Islanders. 14 wins in their past 21 games. Quickly, one more thought on the SEC. Matthew from Jolton says, the top of the Big Ten is better, but the SEC is better collectively. Arkansas would dog walk Rutgers, but Georgia or Alabama can't compete with Ohio State or Indiana. Now, if you're on Team Willie, you would agree with the latter part of that text from Matthew. The SEC is better collectively, and that's why the SEC is the best conference. The first part, you agree with Derek. The top of the Big Ten is better, and those teams are winning the national championships, and Indiana could join that group. Indiana has to get by Oregon. Well, they're both in the Big Ten, right? So one of them will make it to the national title game. But let's get to the Predators. The Predators win again last night, as I just said, against the Islanders. 14 wins in the past 21 games. The Predators are 2 points out of the final wild card spot in the Western Conference. And once again, I am feeling conflicted. By the way, since the day before Thanksgiving, the Predators are playing like a top 10 team in the NHL based on points percentage. And that's why the Predators are back to in the mix. And here again is my position. If you did not hear it yesterday or on Preds Insiders earlier this week, here is my position on what's happening with the Predators. I have thoroughly enjoyed watching the Predators over the past month and a half. It sure as hell beats what we were forced to endure all of last season and the first quarter of this season. But I am a bit concerned that if the Predators keep collecting points at this clip and stay in the wild card mix as the trade deadline approaches in early March, that Barry Trotz will not do what is in the best interest of the franchise in the long term. Now, he told us earlier this week that his plan has not changed. Elliot Freeman told us yesterday that Trotz is still looking to get younger. But it's easy to say that now when we are still around 2 months away from the trade deadline. And I acknowledge that I am probably getting ahead of myself, but I just don't want to see the Predators stuck in the mushy middle, which is where they have been for most of the past several years. So I am enjoying this. I am. Another great game last night. But the more they win and the more they keep in the mix in the Western Conference wildcard race, I'm getting a little nervous. I'm concerned, as I just said, that Barry Trotz may not do what is ultimately in the best interest of the franchise in the long term if the team keeps winning at this rate.
Well, if the team keeps winning at this rate, if you're talking about winning two out of every three, it's hard to argue. I think we know that the nature of this game would suggest they're going to level off. I think Elliot put it well yesterday. They're not as bad as they were at the start of the year, and they're not as good as they played in the last month and a half. I think what their record is about what they are, a team that is not unlike about six teams in the West that somebody, one or two of them, in this group of six, maybe seven teams, are somebody's got to win those two wild card spots. Somebody will be awarded those spots. They have to make the playoffs. The only thing that I emphasized yesterday that I want to emphasize again today, when I saw, you just heard Pete's call of Philip Forsberg's beautiful goal in the shootout, an intense overtime. UC Saros made about three great saves in the overtime to keep it tied, to go to the shootout, and then he stopped all three goals in the shootout. When that game ended, there were 17,000 plus that really cheered. You know, Adam, like, they weren't conflicted in that moment. They erupted. I was down low. I got the unique perspective last night because on ESPN Plus of sitting down low by the glass, where I actually used to sit for a long time when I was doing the Predator pre- and post-game show that Max Hurst does now and Chase does on the road. So it was a unique perspective for me to watch the game. So what I don't like is when you have all these people, party poopers, saying, oh, man, they need to start losing these games, man. Like the Herm Edwards, hello, you play to win the game. Like, it's fun to win. And if they overachieve and stay in it, there's something to be said for that. And I understand the other side of it very, very well. But I'm trying to say, look at this side as well and ask yourself, are you having fun watching these games? And if they were to continue this, which I don't know if they can, it would be a great story, even if it ends up with them losing in the first round of the playoffs.
Now, we've talked about this a couple of times, Willie. We referenced a story written by Daily Faceoff in the summertime about how the Predators have never truly rebuilt. We've never seen the Predators tear it all down and be really bad for several years in a row and collect top draft picks. We've never seen that. I do think that this fan base has matured enough that it would accept lean years like that. Maybe not at the beginning of the franchise, maybe not even 10, 15 years ago. But by now, I truly believe that this fan base would accept some down years if it meant helping it build back up. Look, let me pull a team that has recently undergone this situation, the San Jose Sharks. The San Jose Sharks have been bad for a while. The San Jose Sharks have not made the playoffs since 2019. Remember the Sharks, they made the Stanley Cup Final the year before the Predators made the Stanley Cup Final.
Beat the Predators in seven games.
Right.
They
were winning division titles left and right. Great teams with Joe Pavelski and Brent Burns and Logan Couture, Patrick Marleau. It didn't work, and they had to tear it down. It's been hard to be a Sharks fan for several years, but they were rewarded by having the opportunity to draft Macklin Celebrini. I want the Predators to have a Macklin Celebrini. If the San Jose Sharks make the playoffs, I think there is a very good chance that Macklin Celebrini could win MVP. He has been outstanding. He just made Team Canada. He's what, 19, 20 years old? I want the Predators to have a Macklin Celebrini because it often takes a Macklin Celebrini to win a championship. So I hear what you're saying. I want Bridgestone Arena to be exciting and the fans to be fired up. But my worst case scenario is the Predators are 3 points out of a playoff spot the week of the trade deadline. And Barry Trotz is getting calls on Michael Bunting. Michael Bunting is a pending unrestricted free agent. Michael Bunting has been traded at the trade deadline, I think, each of the past 2 years. He's playing well. Teams will trade for Michael Bunting.
You could get a lot for Michael Bunting.
But Barry Trotz doesn't want to disrupt the chemistry, and he doesn't trade Michael Bunting. And the Predators either miss the playoffs or they make the first round of the playoffs. They lose in five to Colorado, and Michael Bunting walks out the door in free agency. That's my worst case scenario. Not saying that Michael Bunting will determine the trajectory of the franchise.
No, it's a good example.
But that's what I'm concerned about.
I completely see that side of it. But the day in, day out, if a team is clicking to the best of its abilities, I'm just saying it's hard to walk away from that. And there will be GMs that I think are faced with this choice. If it's not Barry Trotz, and it very well might be, it might be three or four guys that are GMs who are looking at the team going, look, this team's battling every night. They're overachieving. Do I really want to break this whole thing down? And maybe you do a little bit of both, right? Maybe you can make a couple of shrewd moves where you trade a pending unrestricted free agent, but you make another trade that maybe keeps you from just killing the morale in your locker room. Because I can tell you a few years ago when the Predators did do it, they made the four trades, right, which have really helped them. Like that was a smart series of moves that they made that they're just scratching the surface of seeing the benefits from. Like part of the return is Reed Schaefer and Tanner Molendijk. And how many years ago was that? 3 years?
2023? Yes.
March of 2023 when they traded Ekholm.
Jeannot,
Granlund,
and Niederreiter.
Four trades. They still haven't really reaped anything from that, from any of the four, right? They're all picks that are still just, like, Reed Schaefer's just getting there. And Reed Schaefer is going to be very good, I think. Tanner Molendijk, I think, is going to get there soon, but he hasn't even played a game yet. And then there's other picks that they just used last year. Tanner Jeannot, the first-round pick was last year. That's Cam Reed, who just played for the World Juniors in Canada. He looks like he could be a pretty good prospect, but we're not going to know for a long time. So the moves you make don't affect your team for another 5 or 6 years in a lot of cases. So I do think they've laid some good groundwork, but I do remember the morale in the locker room was really tough. Like Tanner Jeannot broke down. The team got really emotional when they lost him. And ultimately, when I look back on it, was that the right move? Yeah, it was the right move. I'm just saying it's hard to break a team apart if they can continue with this chemistry. Now, they may make it easy on Barry Trotz. If they slide back and they're in last place, then it'll be easy. The tough one is if they're right on the edge when it gets to that trading deadline, what do you do?
A couple of texts. Jackson says, you nailed my thoughts exactly, Adam. What's the point of throwing away the possibility of collecting future assets just to get blasted by the Avalanche in four playoff games? Sean says, Adam, they've turned over nearly the whole damn team from a couple of years ago. The best way to grow players isn't throwing out a team of 22-year-olds. New kids are cycling in. What more are you wanting? Here, and another texter, by the way, says, tearing down the team on purpose is the dumbest idea ever. Use the talented veterans and people you have to build a team forward. 8 years to rebuild the San Jose Sharks. I seriously doubt that their plan included 8 terrible years to get good again. That makes no sense. It doesn't have to take that long, by the way, but this is my point. What more am I wanting? There are young players on the team right now, okay? Luke Evangelista has surprised me. I did not expect Luke Evangelista to be as productive as he has been. Matthew Wood has shown some things. Reed Schaefer has shown some things. None of those players compare to the talent you get at the top of the draft. I use Macklin Celebrini as an example. None of them hold a candle to Macklin Celebrini. The only way you get the type of player like that, and I'm just using Celebrini because I mentioned the Sharks, but look at the top picks in the draft in recent years. But here's the other thing, too, and I mentioned this briefly yesterday, Willie. With few exceptions, teams that have won the Stanley Cup have had to go through some down years. The Florida Panthers went through some down years.
Some?
Many.
Decades.
The Colorado Avalanche went through down years. The Tampa Bay Lightning went through down years. The Washington Capitals went through down years. With the exception of Vegas, and I would also say the St. Louis Blues in 2019, it's rare for a team in recent history to win the Stanley Cup without bottoming out at some point. So this is, I wrote this like 4 years ago, and I maintain it to this day. The Predators will not get better until they allow themselves to get worse. And I'm enjoying the games. They are so much more fun to watch. But I think this team ceiling is what you are watching right now. Overall, in terms of the overall record, a 500-ish team. And I just, making the playoffs, probably losing in the first round. Aren't you guys sick of watching that?
No. I am not.
Okay. Well, I am.
I like the journey of a team that wasn't predicted to do anything and overcoming adversity and maxing out what they are. And I think I can't argue with anything you're saying, Adam, from a macro standpoint. Deep down, I think there's a lot of logic there, and that's right. I'm just simply saying that if your whole attitude every year is either you've got to be good enough to win the cup or you want to lose every game, that's not how I look at sports. I like to enjoy a journey as a follower of a team from start to finish. And some years are going to be lean. Other years, maybe you feel like you got a chance to win it. But there are some years that I have enjoyed the journey of a team that has lost in the first round or has gotten to the first round and not had it all together. A couple guys get hurt or something, and it ends there. I don't look at those as failures. I enjoy the journey, and the end of the season, my feeling is usually, did the team get everything out of what they had? There is value in that. And I watched the crowd erupt last night on a good win against a good team to go 14-7 in their last 21 after being completely written off. That's a good story. And I'm down with that story. If that's how they want to continue, I will also understand if they go with the pathway that you've chosen there. No matter what they're doing, break it down and trade several assets.
Quickly, let's go to Ryan and Mount Juliet on our phone line. Ryan, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
What's going on, guys? I'm not going to say anything like I love the game, love the way of playing, but Adam, you're right. This team, this organization needs a strip down. You do not get players like Celebrini, Bedard, McDavid every draft. These are generational players, and this year you have one coming out in Gavin MacKinnon, who is another generational player. You have to, if you have a chance to draft these guys, you have to get them. And the one thing about the Preds is they've never had that chance. The highest pick they've had was Seth Jones at 4. Brady Martin last year at 5. Those guys are good. I don't know much about Martin yet. We'll find out. But, I mean, they're good. But we've never had the chance to get the Nathan MacKinnons of the NHL. And this team needs one. Because, like you said, Adam, those guys are what get you the Stanley Cups and what get you to win Stanley Cups.
Thank you for the call, Ryan. We do have more reaction on our text line, so we will continue this conversation coming up next. 615-737-1025. I've made my case. Willie has made his. We want to hear from you. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.